Welcome to Lisa's Walk the Talk Show, where you'll get a sneak peek into stories and lives behind the authors, entertainers, and celebrities that you love to read about. Sit back, relax, and let Lisa and her guests entertain you. Now, here's your host, Lisa.
Good morning. It's October 29th, 2022. This is Lisa, your host of Lisa's Walk the Talk Show, and I have a guest with me today who was actually at a book signing on Monday, Amy Johann. Good morning, Amy. How are you?
Good morning, Lisa. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm so looking forward to this interview. You have actually two books we're going to talk about today, Lost Rochester, Minnesota, and then Your Hidden History of Rochester, Minnesota. Both totally different books and both very interesting. You have to pick one of these books up. Amy has done us a favor by signing all the books that are available at our Peacock Bookstore in the Galleria at University Square, downtown Rochester. If you're just tuning in and don't know where that is, it's just right off Broadway. You can enter that way or off the Peace Plaza. And so, Amy, I think we should start with the start of Rochester. How about talking a little bit about where Rochester is built and the topography and what made Rochester so special with our Driftless area?
Yeah, well, to begin with, you know, like with Rochester, you know, we always talk about Rochester and relate it, of course, to Mayo Clinic. The Med City is its nickname. But when immigrants first came here and settled, it was mainly for farming and, you know, rich farmland and the ability to own property. And so that's kind of what drew people here. And for a while, it was a big wheat producer. In fact, the counties in the southeast part of the state were a huge producer of wheat, not just in the state of Minnesota, but in the country. So that's kind of why the white settlement settlers came here. And of course, they came here because there was a treaty back in 1861 with the Native Americans that, you know, they ended up selling their land here in southeast Minnesota. And that opened up, of course, for the white settlement. So that's why they came across. And of course, yes, the Driftless area, down here is very unique. It's down in the southeast Minnesota, up into Rochester, and then over into Wisconsin and into parts, little corner of Illinois, and then the northern Iowa, which, of course, there's a lot of the Driftless area. There's a lot of, like, underground caves and, caverns and rivers and streams. The topography is very unique here. But like I said, the reason why kind of the settlers came initially was farming. But of course, then Rochester started to grow and grow and grow. And then, of course, the Mayos came and they, of course, put that Med City stamped that onto Rochester. So
very interesting. And you've covered a lot of this in the first chapter of the Hidden History of Rochester book. And, you know, when you sit down to do a book, I'm guessing you have a third one in the works for a Rochester history or another area. What do you do? Do you start with, take us into your writing process. Do you start just with some note cards and interesting subjects, or have you heard of a story from someone and you said, hey, I'm going to research that?
Well, yeah, a lot of it does come from people I talk to. I had the great privilege of doing I was volunteering a lot for a few years in the archives at the History Center of Olmsted County, which I always tell people that it's a treasure trove of information that, you know, a lot of people don't even realize is there. And they have this beautiful archives area that has, you know, historic photos and artifacts and, you know, there's microfilm and access to old newspapers and the articles there. And so I think that's what, for me, it started there in the archives when I was volunteering there. And so I got exposed to a lot of great stories, especially stories that were not as known and had not been covered as much and gotten much spotlight. And then, of course, there are wonderful, passionate volunteers that are over there in the archives department who, of course, have been here a long time and, you know, volunteered there and also lived in the area. And so I would visit with them and I would get input from them. In fact, you know, when I did these books, I talked to them about, you know, stories that they thought might be good to put in these books and to highlight that had not gotten much coverage before. So it was a combination of being exposed to the great archives and the stories there. And part of what I did is I also wrote up various stories for KSMQ. They have a show called about Rochester, our town, it's called. And so one of my duties that I was assigned there, and several other volunteers as well, was to find about 13 stories once in a while for them each season, and write up the, you know, a blurb for their scripts there, and then also find images that went with it. So that exposed me a lot. And then, of course, like I said, talking to those wonderful, passionate people who, you know, are over there as volunteers in the History Center of Olmsted County.
Wow, that has got to be the most interesting job in the whole city of Rochester. I'm in a bookstore, and I meet a lot of neat people too, and hear tons of great stories every single day. But to have your hands right on stories that have been forgotten, like you say, or not given that exposure, bringing them to life, and you've certainly done that through both of your books, and I love all of our Rochester author books. You know, on Monday we had an interview, for those who didn't know, on KAL.com.
Yep. Yep. Channel 6. Yep.
It sounds like you're saying an extra A in there, but you're really not. But they did a great job on the interview with you guys and showing your books, and I hope people, you know, even if you don't pick them up at my store, pick them up at Barnes & Noble somewhere. Just get your hands on these books. I'm sure the library has them. They are full, packed full of Rochester history. And one of the things unique with, you know, my store downtown is, of course, I get all the international travelers. So they're looking for a piece of Rochester history to take home. And, of course, we sell them tons of mail books and other history books, but it's you, Paul Scanlon, Dr. Paul Scanlon, Virginia Wright Peterson,
yep,
Alan's book, and there's other books.
Yep.
Those books sell repeatedly, and I think we talked about this in our interview before, but when I had my store across the street, the Lost Rochester, we couldn't keep it in stock. It just, as soon as it was in, boom, it was gone. So this new cover, though, I have to tell you, The Hidden History of Rochester, Minnesota, I love this scene with the elephants. And tell us a little bit about that cover. How did you get that picture? Where, I mean, I kind of recognize where it's shot, I think. But tell us what street that is. Is that Broadway, or where is that? First Avenue?
It's Broadway. Yeah, it's Broadway. And so one of the things that I was, you know, someone suggested to me was the circus. And the circus was a big deal when it would come to town. And when Rochester in the early days, that was the entertainment that would come through. And, you know, at that time, Rochester, you know, in the 1870s and 1880s, you know, it was kind of a frontierish town. And so they got the circus provided kind of a cultural experience for people. So, and then of course, when the railroad came through, the circus started to come through on the railroad and that was very exciting because they had, you know, cars and they would march through, and they did that. This picture, you know, too, I think, I don't remember if it was in the 40s or the 50s. I can't remember, but you know, it continued through that, those eras as well, that they would actually march down Main Street and people would show up, you know, come out sometimes in their best garb, right? Because it was, this big outing. It was a big social experience. And what was interesting is they had all these great circus pictures too. And this was, of course, one of them. They had other ones too, even earlier than this, that were great as well. And so when I had to, one of the things you do is the publisher asks you to select about 4 or 5 images that you're interested to have on your cover and explain why they're important and why they should be on the cover. And so this was one of them. I had, you know, 4 other ones. And I said, well, you know, it's important because, you know, even though, you know, we didn't have like a permanent circus here in town or anything, they traveled through and there were so many when I researched, you know, it was so many different circuses. It was amazing. It's kind of like the railroads. There were a little different railroads and they all bought out and sold out and merged. The kind of circuses kind of did that too. And they came to town and they entertained people. And sometimes they're here for 1 night or 2 nights. And so I thought, you know, and it's a unique picture. I'm getting a lot of feedback on that. People really like the picture on Hidden History of Rochester, Minnesota. They really think that's a cool photo. So
it's the first thing people get drawn to. They walk in my store. Your books are all lined up right on the first table there. And I can even rearrange them, but they still gravitate to yours. And I don't know if it's the magnifying glass that says Hidden History underneath
it,
but I think it's the elephants. I think they all look at the elephants.
Well,
your other book has. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, and I think, too, that, you know, that's kind of a lost, this, you know, here it's on Hidden History, but it, I'll say lost. It's a lost thing. I mean, they don't do that anymore. There is no big traveling circuses with elephants and all that. Not the big ones. You know, they don't do that anymore. So, and for various reasons, of course, we, you know, why they discontinued all that. But I think that, you know, is unique. People don't see that anymore. It's just not something you see, a bunch of elephants parading down the street. So.
It's nice to know that the elephants left their spirit behind through their footsteps or something.
Yeah, they're immortalized here. They're immortalized in the picture.
Exactly. And, you know, I have to ask you about Lucy Wilder in her bookstore, of course, because it's the one number one topic I get asked in my store. Did you know Lucy Wilder? And tell me, did you know her store was just right across the street? And so tell us a little bit about Lucy Wilder and her bookstore.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. Someone had told me about her too. And I guess what drew me in was her dog. You know, I don't know if you've read that, but you know, her dog was unique, that he would actually, deliver their bank at the end of the day. He would take the bank deposits over. And that was very fun for me. I was like, that's cool. 'Cause I'm a dog lover and he's a Great Dane. So I can imagine, I always think what it was like. Of course, local people would have been like, hey, there he is. You know, he's trucking over to the bank. But new people or visiting people would be like, what is going on? Why is that dog? You know, his name was Thor. And I wish we had a picture of Thor, but I didn't have a picture of him. But and neither did the History Center. But it was just kind of fun. I think that's what drew me in. Of course, I love bookstores too. And yeah, I mean, she had the bookstore for a very long time there. And she was an interesting woman. She also was married to a doctor here, and they traveled extensively. They lived in Washington, D.C. for a while, and she actually wrote columns, political columns. You know, she's very active in that. And it sounded like the bookstore was this great place that people could come in, and she was a great baker too. So it didn't actually specifically say she had baked goods at the store necessarily, but they talked. There was articles about her baking and stuff. So I always thought, you know, I kind of think she probably had baked goods and coffee, you know, for people. And sometimes they'd have wine night and discussions. And so it's kind of a cultural little mecca downtown for not only local people, but for travelers as well that could come down there. So, and talk about books or the news of the day, politics. So that was what, but like I said, I think the dog drew me first, but then the bookstore too, you know, of course, but.
Yeah. And of course, food laws and liquor laws have changed since, so you can't, you know, do those things now, but,
No.
Yeah.
That was,
yeah. Well, like with me, I can cater it in, I guess. So, but yeah, we, you know, I guess even yesterday we were just asked if we could have our space for a book club. So I suppose that's something we could certainly talk to them all about and get great owners there and see if that's something possible. And maybe some of the other businesses can help cook up some food, Chester's or. That's my first choice. Yeah, it's right around the corner. And,
absolutely.
So for people that don't know where my store is, you just, you know, go in, like I said, off Broadway or Peace Plaza, right where Chester's, Lens Crafters, and Poppy's Italian Leather are. You just take that little corner, and I'm all the way back in the old Papa George's Tavern in Michael's, where Michael's restaurant used to exit into there. And, yeah, maybe you want to talk about Michael's a little bit, being it's being torn down right now, and the community's kind of upside down on feelings on that.
I don't know the entire history of Michael's because I haven't. That's a whole other thing. Like I know one of the things in my publisher, you know, these are Lost Rochester and Hidden History of Rochester are part of a series. You know, there's different series. So Lost is a series. So there's Lost like Birmingham, Alabama. There's Lost, you know, various cities, and then Hidden History of Rochester, Minnesota. There's Hidden History of different towns, and one of the series is based on eating, like dining and eating. And Rochester has, you know, an amazing amount of restaurants that are no more, you know, so they're gone, which Michael's was a staple for a long, long time. And I know for years before Rochester expanded and chains moved in and other restaurants, two local restaurants opened up, Michael's was really like the, you know, that was fancy restaurant. That's where everybody went. That was the fancy place to go. And so even I remember that, you know, it was like, oh, Michael's, that's, you know, the that's where you go for fancy meals, special occasions. But that would be a great thing to have in a series, you know, of the dining. And I considered that actually when I was talking to my publisher about doing another, you know, book on Rochester, is that was one of the ones too that they kind of a popular series that they're interested in. So, you know, that could be another, I mean, there's interest in that. Michael's, I will tell you an interesting thing about Michael's. Several years ago, I was there for my birthday and we were in the library of Michael's and I was with my family and in comes Tom Brokaw. So I was like ecstatic because, you know, I have journalism background, media, and also at the time, he had recently received an award from the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism at Arizona State, which is where I graduated from with my master's degree. And also he was on the board of trustees at Mayo Clinic. And so I was working at Mayo Clinic at the time too as an editor. And so they sat down, his wife and him, right next to us. And I debated, you know, do I leave them alone, you know, or am I going to regret not saying something? Because I was a big fan of Tom. And so I decided, I sat there for a long time, you know, debating. And I finally said, nope, I'm going to talk to him because I could talk about the Cronkite School, journalism. I could talk about Mayo. So I got up and my family was kind of like, oh my gosh, you know, she's getting up. And I walked over to him and I was, you know, I was very polite. And I said, hi, Mr. Brokaw. And I, you know, said, introduced myself. And he was so lovely. His wife and him were very lovely, very, you know, very nice to talk to him. And then I just let him alone, you know, but then on his way out, he wished me a happy birthday. And it was funny because he actually squeezed my mom's shoulders and she was like super excited because she kind of, you know, had a crush on him. Tom Brokaw squeezed my shoulders, you know, and he said, you have a lovely meal, you have a lovely family, happy birthday. It was very nice. So that was like, you know, my, a great experience at Michael's. And I think a lot of people probably had those similar experiences because, you know, they used to have that wall down to the bathrooms, I think it was, that was all the pictures of all the celebrities, you know, that had been there at Michael's. And I remember always walking down the hallway and I had to pause and look at the pictures, but yeah, so that was my fun
experience. I think everyone did. Now they, if it was there now, they would do selfies pretending they were in with the celebrity.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, now do selfies. Yeah. Yeah.
I think my favorite story of Michael's, of course I have several, but I remember specifically one night my husband and I were there. My daughter was about 4 or 5 and we were in one of the booths and the waitress came up and asked, you know, what we would like. And at the same time, my daughter is asking, what are escargot? And I said, well, those are snails, and do you want to try them? And she said, yeah, sure. And this table next to me was an elderly couple, and they looked at me with raised eyebrows, and I thought, you know what? If she wants to try snails, she can try snails. So we had them, and they were actually very good. And that's probably my favorite story. It just brings me back home and back to you years ago. But, no, I mean, there's hundreds of Michael stories, and you're right, that celebrity wall with all those photos, it was just breathtaking. I mean, you could skip your meal and just sit and, or just get appetizers and walk down.
Yeah.
Take an hour
and
there.
And I went, my sister, I remember my sister was visiting in town like a few days before it was going to close, you know? And so she went with me and my husband and we went out to eat one last time. So it was sad, but we enjoyed our meal very much and the atmosphere there. So.
Rochester has changed so much. And, you know, the next thing I probably get asked the most is what happened to the, you know, Chateau's, Barnes & Noble. People greatly miss it. And I always say, you know, they're just a mile and a half, couple miles away. So we do, I mean, we even do some runs out there for people if they can't have a car or don't have a car or way to get there. We'll run out there for them and get some books if we don't have them. But yeah, let's get into, you know, my next favorite. Well, there's 100 favorite stories in here, so I can't pick one. But being a photographer myself, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Conley Camera Company because I think I've been down in that area. But it's, that building with the logo is still on that, isn't it? I mean, have you been down?
Yeah, so like that's the, I believe that's, isn't that where the Blue Duck is now? Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yep. Yeah, so, yeah, it's getting used, so that's good. Yeah, and it's always wonderful to see old buildings be revitalized and used. Yeah, that was a very interesting thing, the Sears connection. So they were friends as kids. You know, he was friends Sears was friends with the Conley brothers there, and they were originally in the Spring Valley area and down there. So, and they just started, you know, got interested in the camera business. They had a little shop, and then it, of course, expanded, and then they just, you know, started making parts for cameras. And Sears eventually, you know, kind of highlighted them, basically sold almost exclusively, I think, their camera parts in his, you know, catalog, which everybody remembers Sears catalogs. That's kind of in the catalog business was a big thing for a long time. So they got exposure that way, and it became a big deal because of the Sears connection. So I thought that was really interesting to have, you know, everybody, most people have an idea of what Sears and Roebuck are, but that's kind of disappeared as well. So.
Oh, that's so interesting. And do you know, one of my future upcoming interviews will be with Jerry Searing, editorial cartoonist for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. And he's 92 now, and he and Ed Fisher will be coming for a book signing on November 7th, 11:30 until 1:30 in the morning or afternoon. But Jerry was telling me, I was interviewing him a couple weeks ago, and he was telling me about he and Charles Schulz being friends, boyhood friends. And I mean, it's just amazing how people are, I don't want to say born into, but, you know, how else do you say it? I mean, you end up being neighbors with somebody who, you know, maybe you separate for years and years, but I hear so many people that later on join together, and because of their past bond, they become this, they create something wonderful. And I just think that's so magical. And I can't wait to hear Jerry talk more about that. He'll be doing his own show as well as Ed will do his own show. So make sure you come down and say hello if you're listening. If anything, if you don't even have to buy a book. I mean, just come and thank them for their work and their contributions. You know, that's a powerful, that's going to be such a powerful story for anybody in the Rochester area or cities. I know we've got some people from the cities coming down. But back
awesome.
To your book, I want, before we run out of time, I want to talk about our first policewoman. I mean, let's give some credit to our Rochester police and tell us a little bit about Minnie Bowren.
Minnie Bowren, very interesting lady. She became Rochester's first policewoman in 1917, and she really focused on social welfare for women and children in Rochester, and so that, you know, was a very good progressive thing. And she had was a mother of, at the time, I think, two small children, and since she was she moved here from somewhere else, and I think it was Wisconsin. She was originally from Illinois or Indiana. She took on that mantle, and I think she was in it about 2 years and then passed it on to another woman. But it was very interesting at that time that was happening across the country. There was this movement to have women police officers who, in a way, almost became a lot of like social workers. They really did focus on women and children's needs and protecting women and children and helping them out. And they like helping them, you know, get care or get food and you know, necessities, helping them if they were in abusive relationships, things like that. So she took on that mantle.
Oh. Very cool. And I wonder how much of that, you know, with trying to defund the police and all that now, if that's, you know, bringing social workers in, if that's something that people have gone back in history and searched and said, hey, this worked back then, let's try it again. Or, I don't know. What are your feelings on that?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, maybe, you know, I think that was kind of the beginning of, you know, trying to change things there and care about it more. And women, of course, then wanted the vote too, and they wanted the vote so that, you know, they could start making those changes and helping women, you know, helping them because they didn't have a say. So I think, yes, definitely that probably was kind of the beginning of some of that. So.
I had a really interesting interview yesterday with Libby Sternberg, and we talked a little bit about that if people want to check that out. She's also an author of fiction. She wrote a book called Daisy. But that's on my podcast list. You can listen to that. About women trying, you know, getting the first time, you know, getting your first credit card without having to have your husband and all the things women have gone through. And it's amazing how we live today. And I'm thankful for being in this time period. I don't know if I would have survived in the 1920s.
I don't know if I would have either.
I definitely wouldn't have had a bookstore, and I wouldn't be having a podcast. So I'm glad I'm in the time. God put me where I'm supposed to be is the way I look at it. So, well, we're closing up here. Do you have a couple things you'd like to say about your books, both Lost Rochester and Minnesota and The Hidden History of Rochester, Minnesota? What would you like your readers to take away from both of those books?
I think, both of them, they kind of deal with lost or hidden, stories. And I think that that's what's important. It's to learn from is that there were many, many people and that, business owners and all kinds of different individuals that created Rochester and helped build it and helped it grow. And a lot of my stories do focus on, early days and the foundation of Rochester too into the 20s and 30s as well. But I think that it's just important to kind of highlight some of those, and that's what I hope my books do. And even though there might be some stories that seem familiar as well, like to local historians, they may know some of these stories, I hopefully give it a new take and a new angle. So
very, very interesting. And again, you can pick these books up at our Peacock Bookstore in Rochester, Minnesota. And
thank you,
Linda. Well, thank you, Amy Jo. We've been talking to Amy Jo Han, author extraordinaire, who also writes some other books. So check out her website at amy-han.com. And you've been listening to the Lisa's Walk the Talk Show. This is your host, Lisa. And I will be back next time with a new feature guest to continue this Walk the Talk journey. Have a good day.
Have a good day.
Thanks, Amy.
Bye.
Talk to you soon.
Yep, bye.
Bye now. And I say that to the... You can check out our website.
You've been listening to Lisa's Walk the Talk Show. If you're an author or entertainer and you'd like to be considered for an upcoming broadcast, log on to Lisa's Walk the Talk website at www.lisalc.com for more information. That's www.lisalc.com. Lisa will be back next week to continue this Walk the Talk journey.